This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 491, brought to you by Geek Nation Tours and iFanboy listeners just like you. iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 491. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello!
And making his long-awaited return, the prodigal son, the scion of Long Island, Ron the Sideburn Richards.
I was going to say, it's like the Odyssey. It's like, what's his name? coming back to Greece.
What yeah, you're exactly like Odysseus.
Odysseus. That's I was gonna say Ulysses, but he was a Civil War general.
I think it is Ulysses. I don't know.
Oh my god.
I forgot. What's his name? Yes, well Ulysses. Anyway, regardless, I've returned to Ithaca. I've returned to Greece. I'm home. Hello, gentlemen.
Wow.
You know what I love? I love that there's people out there listening going, who the fuck is this joke? There's one too many Jim Oakes right here.
We met people, Ron, at WonderCon who had been listening only the last couple of years and did not know who you were. Had no idea. So
really? No idea? Yeah. That's idea. Unfortunate.
None. And their lives are frankly better for it.
It's really one of those, you know, like you know, It's a Wonderful Life moments when you sit down and realize that you have no impact.
I do that a lot.
I'm gonna go out to the bridge and just I'm gonna throw my insurance policy and
get going. Let's educate those who have only been listening in the last couple of years. Ron was our original co-host, co-founder of iFanboy. So
he got a thing about whales and he went off with Greenpeace for a while, following an incident, to be fair. And we felt it was best that he leave the show, but penance is paid. Bail is all set, and he's been allowed to come back from the cult where he's been residing.
It's a mixed metaphor.
I threw a lot of stuff in. I haven't slept. So not only are we not going to be used to having three people on here, I'm Wacky Town.
All right, even better, just like old times.
So this is iFanboy. The three of us, Jim Oakes, started this so long ago. And every week we read a stack of our comics. One of us picks the one that is their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. And Ron's like, so what do we do now that we don't have a website? Do we tweet it? We talk about that book. We'll talk about other books from the week. We're going to talk about some other stuff. We'll read some listener mail. It will be fun, says the words in front of me. Here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There will be spoilers. That's it. That's all you got. Ron, you had the pick of the week.
Yeah, well, so when we were plotting my return, it was a sign that I would have to also do the pick. And I was like, oh, I got to do this again. Sure enough, as I read my stack of books this week, the one that stood out to me that amused me the most, book that I've been enjoying, was Howard the Duck number 4 by Chip Zdarsky, art by Joe Quinones, and colors by Rico Renzi and Rochelle Rosenberg. Rochelle.
Well, wasn't it interesting to do the pick and not have to write it?
Oh yeah, no, that was great. It really makes you wonder why we were putting ourselves through that for so long.
Well, you also find that writing it helped formulate your thoughts in the book. But continue.
Yeah, no, it absolutely did. And the thing was, it was funny because I'll be honest with you, it's been a long time since I've done this process. Mm-hmm. And we're gonna talk a little later on about what I've been doing for the past 2.5 years, but God, that was a Jesus. Anyway, but definitely my style of reading from when I was doing the pick of the weeks regularly to how I was reading now is quite different. And so I kind of had to get back into that. Okay, well, how do I organize my books? Which ones do I read, et cetera, et cetera. And I fell back into it fairly quickly. And it was just the idea of, what book, did I enjoy the most and what book kind of amused me the most in for whatever reason. And, talking specifically about Howard the Duck, this was something that, when they announced it, I groaned, I think much like you guys did. I was like, oh, really? Because coming off of Guardians of the Galaxy and the appearance and all that sort of stuff. And for whatever, for those longtime comic fans and those in the comic world, for whatever magic spell Steve Gerber put on comic fandom that made us all think that no one else can write Howard the Duck but Steve Gerber. But he's dead. So,
well,
yeah.
You think that's, he is dead. That's sad. But like, do you think he put that spell out there?
I don't know. Back at it, guys.
Yeah.
Awkward.
No, I don't know. I don't know why that was established. I don't know why that existed, but it's just a character. And yes, Steve Gerber created it, and it's got a great legacy. And there was the lawsuit and all that sort of stuff. But whatever. But honestly, if there's anybody made in modern comics right now to write Howard the Duck, it's Chip Zdarsky. He is, say what you will about his style of humor or whatnot. I like it. I enjoy it. And he's really got a way of pulling together gags, whether they're plays on words or sight gags or whatnot. But what's interesting is that it's not being, I find that Zdarsky's humor in this book is balanced by a reverence for Marvel Comics and not trying to be too cute or too cutesy or too clever for its own good, which is a trap that some people fall into.
By the way, you've been back for, I don't know, how many minutes are we into this now? Maybe say 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And you've already used the phrase reverence for Marvel Comics. So it's nice to know that things are what they once were.
Yeah, so there you go. But what really stood out for me in this book, though, and what's been standing out for me in this book, and what stood out for me in this issue is I just remember back when Wednesday Comics came out and we saw Joe Quinones working on that. And we're like, man,
this is a Green Lantern one, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I believe you did.
It's on my shelf behind me. I haven't sold it yet.
But, it's a different show than it used to be.
It really is. But he's great. He's got this great cartooning style, and it's got a little bit of retro, but it's very clean and that sort of thing. And in this book, he's of course he's drawn Howard the Duck, but Johnny Storm is in it. Doctor Strange, Howard the Duck goes to visit Doctor Strange in the dimension or whatever, and so there's spacey Doctor Strange scenes. There's a flashback to Secret Wars, and he slightly changed the style of drawing it in a simpler 1980s style, to match the Secret Wars flashback. I just think Quinones is doing a great job on it. And it's kind of like one of the perfect artists for this book because, Howard the Duck shouldn't – when I think of Howard the Duck, I think of not simplistic art but clean, kind of more cartooning than anything.
It's funny because Josh thinks of duck tits.
That almost immediately.
Of what?
Duck boobs.
Oh, duck tits.
Breast you said duck, but not the food kind.
Duck tips, I thought you said.
Nope. That movie scarred me.
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing about Quinones is that I feel like I'm saying his name wrong. We're going to get emails. But
just assume we are.
Yeah.
I always assume we are.
Quinones.
Joe Quinoa.
Yeah.
he's a guy who I have had my eye on for a long time. I've seen his art come up here and there, but he's never really landed on anything for a significant amount of time to make his mark, I suppose. It's always like, oh, that guy's really good, but you know, but maybe this will be the thing that sort of
that Black Canary Zatanna OGN with Paul Dini, so that took however long it was 100 pages or whatever it was.
Yeah, but he's great, and
he's really good.
Yeah, and I mean, what I think one of the funniest parts of this was, you know, so Howard the Duck, he's working on a case, he's trying to solve it, he realizes that it's getting a little bigger than what he's aware of, it's you know, slightly mentioning Infinity Gems and that sort of stuff, so he goes to visit Dr. Strange to get some help, and of course Wong is there, and Wong has said, oh no, he's not there, he's in the objectivist realms of Deco, battling the demon Thog for control of the universal concept of sadness, you know, like Wong is doing his typical, like, no, you can't go in there, and Howard just bursts right in and goes into the dimension and tracks down Doctor Strange, and he's playing poker with Thog and some other demons. And the reason why is because Wong gets annoying and he just needs to get away sometimes. And
that's funny.
Yeah. And so, and then of course they come out from the dimension and Wong is like, Steven, we're all went well in dispatching the Nether Spawn Thog. And he's like, yes, he was bested. You know, like, it's just this idea of, I love the Doctor Strange Wong relationship. I don't know why. I think that's funny. But Zdarsky taps into those funny kind of nooks and crannies in between the panels of what, you know, the inherent humor of this stupid world of comics that we've created, and how they would be you know, reflected upon by real people. And I think, and Howard the Duck is inherently in his origin is satire, and so a lot of this, you know, like, it plays perfectly well and it plays great. And so, yeah, so really enjoyed the issue. A lot of fun. Loving the series so far. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what the hell they're doing with the whole thing, you know. So I don't know what's
going to happen. We're all lost.
Yeah, I don't know. But
you watch the comments. People are going to get mad at us because we don't know what's going on. And it's not because we can't find out. It's that we don't really want to.
Right, yeah. Well, it's just
listen, if it doesn't make sense to me just looking at it, that's not my problem.
Yeah, yeah. And we're going to get into that later on with a couple other books. But but for now, Howard the Duck is like, it's a solid read. It's just like, you don't need to read anything else. It's contained in its own little world. It's very funny. If you're a Marvel fan, you will get a lot of the jokes. The cover says it's not a Secret Wars tie-in, but a original Secret Wars from the 80s tie-in. They throw Deadpool in. I don't know why.
There's a backup story with art by Katie Cook.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there've been backup stories in all these issues so far, and they've been good. So yeah.
Josh, did you read it?
No. I read probably half of the first issue, and I thought, I don't like this.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Didn't do it for me. Is Zdarsky? I know him as artist on Sex Criminals, but right. has he written other stuff? Has he done other stuff before?
Well, yeah. For years, he did a web comic called Prison Funnies that he wrote and drew. And
obviously he's not a new writer, you know, in the sense of would you like to write a book, artist person?
Oh yeah, no, he's somewhat established in that. And I'll be honest with you. I know you. I'm guessing you guys aren't big fans of Sex Criminals or whatnot. But honestly, I chalk up a lot of the humor of that book to Chip. Chip is a very funny guy. And
I'm still reading that in issues. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
He doesn't care anymore.
Nope.
No, you said not like that. You said that you guys aren't probably reading it. I am.
Oh, okay, good. All right. I didn't realize.
He's very funny in interviews and on Twitter and on stuff. So
yeah, and in person and all that stuff. Yeah. So he's a good comedy writer, and so Howard Duck is perfect for him. So. So Howard Duck number 4, my return pick of the week. There you go.
Josh, I struggled pretty hard at Superbad 41.
Oh, so did I. I was like, what the hell is this?
I don't want to say that, but yeah. I kind of did too. This is the first issue from Jean Lin Yang.
This is the first issue?
I think so.
This
is as confusing in sort of what the hell is going on here as Greg Pak's return after whatever.
Well,
it was
the reason that was confusing was because it takes place after this storyline, so we didn't know how it gotten there.
Right.
But I still feel like the ethos of Superman is captured in the Pak book, but it's not captured here. He seems really ineffectual and kind of dumb.
Jean Yang, creator I really like a lot.
Yeah, I love Jean.
He's done some wonderful work. American Born Chinese is a wonderful graphic novel. I forget the name of the King of the Geeks one. There's another name.
He's done a bunch. The Shadow King.
The Green Turtle.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and that wonderful graphic novel, Boxers and Saints.
Yes, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was with great excitement that I sort of saw his name, and I was like, oh, let's get to this. Straight off, first thing, I don't feel like Romita's right on this at all. So I don't think that is helping.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. I'm not saying Romita's bad. It just seems weird on this. I don't know why. I felt it was weird when Jeff Johns was writing it with him. Other than that, the tone's not there yet.
The tone isn't there, but also I feel like now this solar flare power that depowers him has become the crutch. I feel like we never see him with his powers anymore because we talked about the action book and how he's depowered there, and that's okay, but I just feel like every time I turn around, he's flaring out to defeat a adversary he should easily be able to defeat on his own, and then no powers again. And they just feel like they don't want to write him with powers.
To be completely honest, I don't know that I fully can lay this at the team of the creator. This has been the problem since the New 52 reboot. The two books are
never
seemingly
in sync. They're never.
But they're supposed to be, but they never have been.
So is this solar flare power is when he vomited light?
Yes. Yeah, he can expel all the solar energy in his cells in one big blast. That's the new power he discovered in the last arc, and it ends up depowering him for a certain amount of time.
And he smells like Korean barbecue?
Well, something was singed, I guess.
That's a joke.
That was a joke? Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get this.
I am absolutely willing to give it more time and let the writer get his feet under him for this, because I don't know that he's ever done an ongoing superhero comic book. I really liked all of his work. But no, I definitely agree.
I was confused. So the book starts with him riding a plane.
That is in the future in Action Comics. It's very confusing. So he
it is.
In Action Comics started the post-convergence story with him already in the future, having lost his powers with the T-shirt, his identity already exposed by Lois Lane. Everybody knows who he is. A crew cut. And so then we go back to the future or the past with this book to find out how he got there.
That's heavy.
So,
oh God, why did I come back to this?
I don't know. You don't like Superman, so I don't
know
why
you
read this.
But I thought I'd give it a shot. I'd kind of see what it is.
I respect that.
Yeah, yeah.
The best part of this issue was the variant cover by Carl Kerschel with the Joker being in the Lois Lane role from Superman the movie.
That was very funny.
Can you read my mind? it's the facial expression.
Yeah, it's great.
On both of them. So I was disappointed because, like you, Josh, I was really looking forward to Yang's take on Superman. And I don't know. It just all feels completely wrong.
The characterization, especially near the end, the last chunk of pages, was really weird. Where basically, so what it was is that Clark is working at the Daily Planet and he gets a call. By the way, uniform still looks awful. And he gets a text from somebody who's like, go here. And the next thing we know, they're inside a building watching a weapons deal go down. And then afterwards, there's another text. He's like, who are you? And they were like, I know that you're Superman. And somebody's going to come there and you need to arrest her right away. And everything after that seemed kind of out of character.
Yeah, he lets this woman be kidnapped.
Yeah.
This is the most unheroic. I'm getting emotional about it. This is the most unheroic I've seen him.
Yeah, you okay?
And then he goes to get her. So I'm sort of like, well, maybe there's another thing going on we don't know about. Like, it's one of those things like, why is Superman acting so weird? You know, like a Silver Age comic, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I was going for.
I'm almost feeling that it's the first issue and things could change. I'm not writing it off yet. I just didn't think this one worked. But it might work in retrospect.
I kind of like the idea at first. I was like, oh, it feels a little simpler. A little more basic, and I'm saying Silver Agey, but there's a better term for it. But and I was like, okay, I welcome that. That's good. But yeah, it needs more seasoning, basically. So hopefully it straightens itself out.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm gonna stick with it. I thought I'd give it a shot because of the Romita and all that stuff, but it's not my kind of comic book.
I would say try the Action Comics from Pop.
Okay.
Those might be more your.
I like that Greg Pak. He's good.
Yeah.
And Aaron Cooter is doing wonderful work on those two.
So many people are probably excited that you're back, Ron, because Josh and I have been basically reading virtually no Battle World tie-ins, and so now you are back.
Yes, I'm selectively reading them.
Marvel Zombie of the group.
Yeah, I mean, generally, my whole opinion of the Secret Wars Battle World thing or whatever is that in the grand Jonathan Hickman style, it is a very, very big idea, and they have a lot of very, very big ideas that I feel like they're trying to execute in a very short period of time, and that is they're trying to do too much in too small of a time. And because of that, I'm not reading. I mean, I'm reading the ones that interest me, but I'm not reading a lot of them.
Does it make logistical sense to you?
No, it's just chaos. It's just it makes no sense whatsoever. And Secret Wars. I mean, I'm current on Secret Wars.
Yeah.
And I like it. I think
Secret Wars is good.
I think it's really cool. I don't know what the fuck is going on, but I think that's the point. I mean, that's the whole idea.
When you bring in the ultimate end along with that, that's when it really starts to make no sense.
Yeah. But my approach with it is that okay? Well, fine. You know, like the whole Battle World thing is revisiting stuff that we've liked. You know, like different eras or whatever. So like, so we're talking about E is for Extinction, which is, you know, the revisiting of the, you know, Grant Morrison era leather jacket, new X-Men. Right. And you tell me you got a book that Chris Burnham is writing with art by Raymond Villalobos and like in that era? Sure, sign me up. And this was a blast. You know, like I felt like
you hated that era.
Yeah, but now it's kind of ironic that I can go back and enjoy it. But I mean, you can't tell me that you're not looking at this Raymond not going to work here anymore. Villalobos art, and you know, see that it's channeling. Of course, it's channeling Frank Quitely, because what they've done is they've tried to get artists that can kind of do in the style of the artist of that time, but aren't that artist, you know. Right. So, but
they're not going to bring in Quitely for this,
right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. but I think Villalobos.
You know too much.
But I think Villalobos, you know, kind of is doing. You know, he's got a style very similar to Quitely, and he's done it on his own. Like he made it his own with this issue. And I think, is this the first thing Burnham's written, or
no? He's definitely written other stuff.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think he did. And it's funny because Burnham's working with Grant, and so like Burnham's kind of channeling Grant by working with him. And I enjoyed this. I don't know how this fits into the fucking Battle World thing. I don't know. I don't give a shit. I like it, you know. There's it's a fun take on where these characters would be now. You know, had these stories progressed. And so I enjoyed it. You know, so
that's the fun thing about Battle World that should be working.
It's What If.
But at the same time, which is no different than Convergence was, it's like the same thing.
Same thing.
But you know, neither of them feel like they have any stakes. So unless what you're reading is really excellent, it isn't that compelling.
Exactly.
Especially since there's so much of it. Burnham also wrote, I know, at least a special or a mini for Batman Inc.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did.
I remember that now.
But it's the kind of thing where I'm looking him up now on ComicBookDB, because this is what people love when people go to the internet on a podcast to answer a question. Yeah.
You don't have to say anything. You could have just let us talk.
Well, you can probably hear the typing.
I haven't done this. Done this in a while.
Oh yeah, he's got a bunch of writing credits. He did the app in Batman Incorporated. He wrote the interlude, A Bird in the Hand. He wrote it says he's listed as a writer, a Fear Agent number 21, which that can't be correct.
Maybe a backup story.
Oh, did he do a backup? Yeah. And then he wrote some Hack/Slash stuff. Yeah, so that's cool. It's neat to see him stretching out and becoming a more well-rounded kind of creator, you know, not just an artist. Mm. I'm looking at the Battle World stuff as What If, and I'm mainly buying the X-Men related ones. You know?
Really?
Yeah, I bought the Extinction. I was all over that Extinction Agenda one. I was like, yes. but really, the failure for me ends up being the art, because again, it's not the, you know, whatever.
It's not quite.
Not quite there. But yeah, but this was great. I thought it was really cool. This was potentially in the running for Pick of the Week. So yeah,
that would have been perfect.
Yeah. Are you guys reading Invisible Republic? Of course you are, right? Because it's Gabe Hartman. It's fantastic, right?
Yeah.
That book is a book that I'm immensely proud of. That image that I kind of helped bring to Image and worked with Gabe and Karina on getting it published and that sort of thing. And it's the kind of, I read each issue and it's the same feeling I get when reading Lazarus, where I'm like, wow, I really
I was
I want to see this as an HBO show. You know, like I want to see that this is, and it's tapping into science fiction, it's tapping into intrigue and all that sort of stuff. And I just think that the pace that they're telling the story at is perfect for the story that we're, you know, like it's great to see Gabe and Karina as creators making something that they want on their terms, that they don't have to worry about any other stuff, and telling it the way they want to. And I think it's some of the best work they've done. So.
Lazarus is a really good comparison to make, as I was thinking it's a book very similar to that. So if you're like, I want more of that, but with a different flavor, they don't write stories the same way. If you liked the Planet of the Apes stuff they did, I think that you'll get a kick out of this. But it's all completely original. I think you've got this story that's like it's world building. There's a fictional history. There's politics and intrigue and a mystery, and we're time jumping back and forth. There's a lot of things I like going on here.
The contextual sound effects of the bike going over water, which was so awesome.
Yep.
I like this issue the best of the run. I think my biggest struggle with it is just that I don't know enough about the characters to really care about any of them yet.
See, I feel like it's landing, and now I never know any characters' names, as we know from listening to the show, but like the female who's now working with Maya. The honey, like you're watching things start to work out for her.
Yeah, that's why I like this one the best, because I'm learning about her now.
And all right, exactly. And I want to know how she got in this position in the first place, that she was with whoever the dictator dude is, not Jim Gordon. That's what I'm Arthur McBride. And how that's going to come back to her, and we don't know. We still don't know much. It's only four issues in, and what he said at the end. So people have asked how long it is. It's at least 30 issues of five issue arcs. So there'll be six of these, I guess. And there's a lot left to do.
Yeah.
There's a lot of story though.
It's,
sure.
Yeah, and it's a neat world. I like how it's pretty. Basic. It's very subtle. In a really fun way. We're just sort of getting bits of it at a time. There's a little chunk in here where they're walking the reporter out, and he's like, you know what that is? And it was like the big weird metal thing, and he said no. And then we learned a ton about the world.
Yep.
The moon that they're living on, in a really nice economic method of sort of getting that part of the story across. Great issue.
Yeah, it's just so well crafted, so well done. So I can't recommend Invisible Republic enough. I love it. So
this week we saw the debut of We Are .. Robin number one. There's an exclamation point in the title.
I read this.
Art by Lee Bermejo. Lee Bermejo, with art by Jorge Corona and Rob Haynes. And if you look deep enough, Cary Randolph. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of people on this book. It's funny. I really did like this, but it took me a while to wrap my head around how I felt about it, because the once safe environs of Gotham City are like completely foreign now, and I don't.
Following Endgame, is this
existing just in general
that?
in the New 52? It's been that way most of the time. Mm-hmm. You know, Tim Drake is unrecognizable. They really don't want to deal with Dick Grayson at all, so they sent him off to join Spider, and he's off doing weirdo missions for them, and that came out this week too. And Jason Todd is Red Hood, and he's around, and I've said it, I hate Damian. So there's really this sort of unrecognizable Gotham City to me. And so this issue, so we have another Robin book. We've got Robin, Son of Batman, I think, that I'm ignoring.
So why is Damian not dead? Was that before 52-52?
No, he died post New 52, and then he came back, I guess, with superpowers. I don't know. I'm pretending he doesn't exist. But
I don't know anything about it, and I really do try to be objective. That's horrible.
So here we have a street kid who is prone to fighting, but he's also super smart, and he was once saved by Batman, and Leslie Tompkins is his social worker, and through a series of events in which he has to flee his foster home. He runs into trouble and ends up running into a bunch of kids who have styled themselves Robin. They've got Robin-esque clothing, and they say, We Are Robin, and they're sort of street justice warriors. And we see some mysterious benefactor watching them through cameras. We pull back to see he's got a whole room full of Robin costumes and weapons and things that he's going to clearly connect with these kids. So I like the concept of it, And I like the idea of Robin as a sort of urban myth character. Because they've done it with Batman before, so why not have kids do it with Robin? Because you assume that that's something kids would be drawn to. But it's just funny that how there's almost nothing, and we're going to get to another Batman book later on, how almost nothing to hold on to at this point emotionally for me. I find it more enjoyable intellectually than I do emotionally, which is tough.
It's a good concept, the way that you describe it, to sort of have like the gang of Robins around.
Yeah.
Since there's so many of them, they don't know what to do with them. So.
But it's funny, if you think about the actual Robins, I think Tim is now Batman Beyond. I think they jettisoned him to the future. Dick is running around Europe, and I don't know where Jason is, and Damian is possibly a superhero, but I don't know. It's just a strange thing that's going on in the DC, in Batman's world in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I read this, and I didn't know what this was.
Well, it's all on the face. I mean, there's no background information you need from this
yeah, book. No, that's why, because I was like, all right, great. I'm like, I know DC's trying new stuff, and this is a number one, and I like Cary Randolph, and I like Lee Bermejo, and
listen, I know you've been gone a while, but some things don't change.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty much that's pretty much it. So,
you know, hedge your bets with those folks.
Yeah.
So that was We Are ... Robin. Number one.
Are we?
So yeah. So there's just a lot of people just being Robin?
Well, but this gang of kids is protecting the streets as Robin.
All right.
I like the idea, and I'm going to keep reading it. I was just saying how emotionally I have nothing to hold on to, almost nothing to hold on to in Gotham anymore.
Yeah.
So
well you got those bunny ears you could hold on to.
Well, they're made for holding, I think.
Yeah.
So I might go on a vacation to clear my head, and if I do, if I'm looking for the perfect geek-themed vacation, I will look no further than Geek Nation Tours. Geek Nation Tours is proud to announce their return to New York City this fall. Attend the New York City Comic Con and explore the cities that's the home of the Avengers, Daredevil, Spider-Man, and many more iconic comic book-themed locations over the 7-day tour. They're even going to go to Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash comic book store in New Jersey and the fictional address of the Fantastic Four. Geek Nation Tours handles all travel, hotel, and tickets to the con. All you need to do is have a good time. But comics isn't all they have. Geek Nation Tours offers great tour packages like the Journey to Middle-Earth tour, where you head to New Zealand to the world of Lord of the Rings.
I think we know who runs that tour also.
The Zombie Apocalypse Training 101, perfect for Halloween or the Walking Dead fan as you travel to Atlanta to see the film sites, get hands-on survivalist training and more. And the Galaxy Far Away tour. You may have missed Star Wars Celebration this year, but now's the time to start planning next year's celebration. And all these tours and more can be found at geeknationtours.com, where you can book your geek tour today. There's nothing on here about whether they give you the proper vaccinations to go to Jay and Silent Bob Secret Stash in New Jersey.
Ooh, that's a good point. That's a very good point.
I was in New Jersey this morning. Newark.
Did you have to go through quarantine?
Yeah, I got Hep M through.
Jesus.
I don't know. I'm tired. I don't like. Here's what I know. I don't like that airport. That's what I'm saying.
Are you still reading Flash, Ron?
No, but well, yeah. I mean, well, I stopped for a while. I've thoroughly enjoyed this season of The Flash on television.
Yes.
And so when I saw that The Flash number 41 came out this week, I'm like, oh, I'll give it a read. And I said, I don't think I need to do that again.
Who does this now?
I was like, oh, Brett Booth. I liked him 20 years ago, and I don't like him anymore. And I don't like that costume, and I don't like any of this. It's not for me.
It's really hard, the DC stuff right now.
It's really hard. Really tough to read.
Not for us.
The costumes are terrible.
Yep.
They brought back a lot of guys who were big stars 20 years ago, and it's just not working.
And like the thing is that like the villain who's like Rhino or whoever the guy in the green is, like it's such like the offshoot of the Jim Lee Justice League from the New 52 kind of design look, you know.
They're all terrible.
And it's just like, and it's nothing that gets me excited about the Flash got me excited. And even though it's got the Reverse Flash and Barry's trying to solve his mother's murder again, and you know, and like all and all this sort of stuff, and I'm a huge Flash fan, but this is not the Flash for me. So.
Hashtag not my flash.
Yeah, not all flashes.
I was excited that Rasputin returned this week, written by the Proof creators, Alex Gresham, drawn by Riley Rossmo, who's also working on Not My John. hashtag not my John.
But this is the creator-owned book. This is issue number 6. They were coming back from a brief hiatus after the 5th issue, because that's how numbers work. And we've sort of shot forward into the present time, and Rasputin seems to be a political advisor who can also resurrect the dead.
Can't pull off that goatee, though.
Nope, but it's fine. There's also a flashback to the Galician border, which I think is World War I, where we learn a little more about his powers and how it works. This sort of just got us set up for where we are now and what's going on. And I don't know. It's interesting. I had no idea any of this was coming. I don't know what it's going to be. But I really like the sort of mixing of history and then now modern times and sort of this. The supernatural edge is just good enough. And again, I've said this before when we were talking before, like Riley Rossmo's, he was never bad, but he's really come a long way. Mm-hmm. I think his art's really good and he can dot pitch all over the place.
Yes.
It's good stuff. So I was glad to see that come back. If you liked it before, don't miss it.
Cool. I picked up Age of Ultron versus Marvel Zombies number 1 for one reason and one reason alone.
Okay.
Because James Robinson wrote it.
Okay.
I just feel. Oh. I was like, really, James Robinson wrote this?
When you just said that, yeah. I went,
I'm
checking this out.
Incomprehensible. But that's not James's fault. James is a very good writer, very well done. Steve Poo did the art.
I'm fairly sure his name's not Poo.
P-U-G-H, Poo, right? Pug? Pug?
Pew.
Didn't we go through this like 3 years ago on Animal Man?
Yeah, this it's definitely his name's not Steve Poo.
Time is a flat circle, but yeah, but for whatever reason, but actually, honestly, I kind of liked it because what happened was is that, you know, so I guess in Battle World, Marvel's like on the bottom of Battle World, Marvel like was like the shitlands, like the Marvel Zombies and the Age of Ultron area are really rough.
Please tell me that's a real thing, the shitlands.
But for whatever reason, so like they've got Tigra is running around in the Marvel Zombies area, and then Hank Pym from the Old West version pops up in a bowler.
God.
And he's a very fancy lad, and he meets up with the Vision and the Human Torch and Wonder and Simon, of Wonder Man.
Was there an Old West version of the Marvel Universe?
Yeah, there is. There's the Two Gun Kid and all that sort of stuff.
No, but yeah. Hank Pym.
Hank Pym's from it for some reason. I don't know why. All we got is a first line of Hank Pym's internal dialogue is, "Boy, do I feel like a tenderfoot, dressed up all spiffy like a carpetbagger or a traveling salesman."
Well, you got to understand, back then, domestic violence was acceptable.
Oh Jesus!
This book looks awesome.
Yeah, doesn't it?
it looks like a complete mess, but it looks wonderful. You know what I mean?
Steve Pugh's a really good artist. So.
Yeah. No, it was good. It was amusing. Again, I don't know what the hell's going on. There's a Sentinel. There's Morbius. It's just batshit crazy. Yeah.
How long are these little minis going? Because I thought they were all 2 issues, but this week, obviously, we saw that we are dinosaurs. What was that one, Josh?
We are dinosaurs.
We are dinosaurs.
It was the pick of the week last time. And you said we are dinosaurs, and now I can't stop. Where monsters dwell.
It's like
when somebody's trying to remind you of a song, but all you have is another song in your head, and you can't get to it.
I thought that was going to be a 2-issue story, but apparently it's not. So I'm just curious how long these are going.
I'm guessing 4. I don't know.
It depends on the months, the schedules. Yeah. I mean, it could be, I don't know.
It could be 12 by the time it's over with.
Oh, Jesus. What I just said has no relevance. 4? It was just a random number I just picked out of the air.
Well, this definitely ended with a to be continued, so.
Yeah. I know that Garth Ennis has done 4-issue series before, so that's why it's a safe bet. I didn't read Batgirl 41.
So Batgirl 41 is the issue where the bunny ears show up. So Batman and Batgirl run into each other, and this is important because Batman is James Gordon and Batgirl is Barbara Gordon. So after they have their little clash because he's trying to arrest her, because apparently his mandate is to arrest all the vigilantes, which is strange, he comes to visit his daughter as himself. And so now we've got James Gordon with his daughter walking around town, and he's got his trench coat on, but he's got his mohawk and his lack of mustache. And I was fairly plainly horrified. And especially after they do a little flashback to them as a, where she's a kid. They go to a carousel and she remembers when they were, when she was a kid, and he, you know, he's got the big old handlebar Wyatt Earp mustache in the flashback and regular hair. And then I look back and this is hashtag not my Gordon.
Wow. That's where we're at now.
This is where we're at. This
I,
is,
I like a carousel flashback. It's like they've been Grey's Anatomy. Ugh.
It, I mean, the book is super fun still, but just, and the whole time she's freaking out as we are freaking out, she keeps saying, please, for the love of God, but the, grow the mustache back. And
she's saying hashtag not my Gordon.
Right. And, he, she even says, oh, I've got a new job. I'm not the commissioner anymore. I'm more than that. And she's like, okay, does this job require you not to have a mustache?
Like, there's really no reason why he had to shave. There's really no
maybe
reason.
Maybe the bunny ears have like contacts and they need to hit skin right. on his head.
She's like, I mean, it's not like they can stop you from growing a mustache at this new job, right? So it's like she's as freaked out as we are, which is fine, but it doesn't change the fact that I'm still freaked out.
Yeah, as you should be. I feel, yeah, this is it's a horrible, horrible look.
And also, Livewire is the villain. I hated Livewire on the cartoon.
Yep, me too. It's exactly where I decided not to like that character
so much. So,
but I did like what was the who's the one who sucks the energy? The one that was always with her on those episodes.
I don't know.
Parasite?
Parasite.
I like Parasite.
Yeah, Parasite's a great character. But
I like how you're just like, Parasite.
I got there. I slept 2 hours, maybe tops.
Yeah, well, so, all I'm hearing are excuses. That's all I'm just saying, and I'm glad to see nothing's changed.
It was fun other than the horrifying moment where I realized that, that Jim Gordon was really weird.
So at the end of Black Widow 18, I was fairly certain that was the end of Black Widow.
So, Ron, have you been playing along with our favorite game at iFanboy now? Now that you're back, you have to join in.
Which is?
It's called, is this the last issue?
and then be pretty sure it's the last issue, but then make it, make
then
definitely
then
sure.
And then tell everyone listening that it's the last issue, and then yeah. next month there's another issue.
Oh, yeah.
Hashtag not my last issue. no, the end of Black Widow, also the end of Punisher number 18, yes, which was fairly... last month. Nathan Edmondson's two books at Marvel. I was sure.
That was last.
No, they both came out this week.
Nope. Yep.
Yeah. At the same team wasn't that you know they just decided to keep it going. I was, well, maybe these are different people. Nope. No, it's Edmondson and Phil Noto.
Wasn't this one listed as a Battle World issue?
I don't know.
They're
it's
all.
Not.
They're just everything is.
And,
but what it is though is it's a. This book doesn't seem to have any context in the Marvel Universe anyway. Yeah. And this one's a flashback to her. This is interesting. This was interesting. It was a flashback to Natalie's. Days as an operative, but in Cuba,
Cold War Cuba.
Yeah, so she's old.
Oh yeah, she's like as old as Cap and Nick Fury.
Yeah, I just wasn't sure if they had sort of retconned that going forward, you know, but they hadn't. So she's definitely old like them. It was really interesting. It was a great first part of a story.
Yeah, it was strange. Like for a book, you feel like it's wrapping up. Now they dive into a Cold War flashback story that's not a one shot.
Yeah,
like what is going on?
iFanboy.com/support is where you can go if you would like to contribute to the program. One way to do so would be to go to Amazon.com through there. And anything you buy, anything, we get a little bit of. Doesn't cost you anything. Doesn't cost any extra. It's actually it's a very important source of support for us. So if you want to keep using that link, or you know, go over to your parents' computer next time you're over there trying to get their printer working again, just change that.
Are we in like some sort of Captain? What was that old timey TV host who asked the kids to steal from their parents to?
Oh, Soupy Sales.
Soupy Sales.
Yeah. Okay, kids, go into mommy and daddy's wallet and get one of these. And he held up a $5 bill. Yeah.
That no, I'm not doing. I'm saying they're going to go to Amazon anyway.
Okay.
If they know how to use it. Your parents are not going to Amazon actually. What? How come all your gifts are on this list? What is a wish list? Why don't you just go? What store should I go to? It's my Uncle Melvin. I don't have one. Or you can donate more directly. Again, ifanboy.com/support, where you can choose a membership at $3 a month or $30 a year. A bargain. Or donate in any amount that you wish more directly. And, of course, we obviously appreciate everybody who does that. And now, we've got Ron's bills back on the thing we've got to worry about. So we're going to need to ramp those up.
It's a hefty bill.
The guy goes through money like water.
You wouldn't believe it.
You would not believe it.
So thank you, everyone who does that. And we appreciate everyone who does any of those methods to keep the show going. Now, This is the time of the show where normally we'd answer some listener questions, some audience questions. But since we've got Ron here, and Ron's been gone for 2.5 years working in the comics industry, we thought we'd ask Ron some questions.
Yeah, figured, you know, the for those longtime listeners who probably want, you know, are curious about what the past 2.5 years have been like, as well as anybody new who doesn't know who I am or whatnot, I figured I'd give you guys the opportunity to ask me anything.
Who are you?
Well, I grew up a small blend.
No.
I just watched that recently, actually.
It's so good. It's funny. So good. All I need is this remote control.
So, Ron, you were
gone. He hates these cans.
Ron, you were gone working.
Saying lines from a movie now.
At Image, nothing's changed. Nothing has changed. So, Ron, you left 2.5 years ago to go work for Image Comics.
Correct.
And so I'm curious, as someone who grew up a fan of comics and then spent 13 or so years being a member of the comics media, what was it like to then go behind the scenes? And is everyone wrong who talks about comics?
Well, I'll answer your last question first with a resounding yes. everyone in the media, on Twitter and the fan, all the stuff who talk definitively about, you know, guessing why companies do things and talk about what they should do knows nothing.
And you're including yourself in that.
I was including myself, yeah. And that was definitely a you know, going behind the curtain and learning how everything works and going, oh, okay, that's why they do that. Okay, was definitely really, really interesting. A lot of people asked if it ruined my enjoyment of comics or if I didn't. And it didn't, because I think if I had gone into that job 5 years ago, it could have. But I think that, you know, much through the stuff that we did at, here at iFanboy, the people we talked to, the stuff we did while graphically, just the knowledge and the I mean, I don't mean this to say it in a negative way, but the maturity mm-hmm. level I was at when I took the job, I was able to just look at them as widgets or as products that we were making. Mm-hmm. And separate myself from the love of the art form and that sort of thing. And I was very good at keeping the two kind of separate, you know? So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Okay. Now, what was the most surprising thing you learned?
That how to put this nicely. The most surprising thing I learned, well, there's a couple answers to that. I mean, one is, we've argued about it for years, but the mm-hmm. whole thing about pre-ordering your comics with your retailer, 1,000% true. Mm-hmm. I mean, books live and die on those numbers. And, you know, orders come in, and that is what's defining the future of a book. And it can honestly, it can one drop or one badly ordered book or one whatever can kill a title, especially an Image. And so, you know, we've argued about it and, you know, some people don't want to pre-order and all that sort of stuff, but absolutely the one thing people can do as readers to directly impact the life of a book or the creators is to pre-order, because buying it on the shelf, nobody cares. The customers of the comic book industry are not the people listening to this podcast, are not readers. The customers are 100% the retailers. And in all the work that we did at Image and all the work that they do with the other publishers, it is all about getting the retailers to buy more, to buy the books.
How do you feel about retailers now?
You said to ask you anything.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Retailer, it's a mixed bag. I mean, there are some fantastic retailers. There's some wonderfully engaged retailers doing amazing stuff. And what was great was that a lot of my job was working with retailers and talking to them and that sort of stuff. And I've discovered comic book stores I didn't know existed and seeing what they're doing for their communities and all that stuff. That I could rattle off a list of stores around the country. You know, Tate's Comics in Florida. It's been a couple of weeks, so it's kind of faded. Third Eye in Maryland. You know, like there's a whole bunch of great stores up in the Seattle area. You know, I think Arcane or, you know, like there's a whole, you know, like Challengers in Chicago. Like they're these, you know, great stores who are really busting their asses, And then there are the other retailers who aren't and who don't care and who blindly order and are not knowledgeable in anything or anything like that. I mean, I could tell you guys the emails I got in response to when Southern Bastards came out. When Southern Bastards first came out, part of my job was to, you know, was to email retailers to get them to order more and to make them aware of it. And we would get preview, we would get, you know, like the PDFs, you know, so they could see it before they order it and that sort of thing. So I emailed, you know, my list of retailers, and some of the emails I got from some of the retailers in the Midwest and the South were just like, oh my God, like, I don't know what is wrong with you people at Image that you're trying to lower community standards with these books. You know, like you guys are publishing smut and passing it off as art, like stuff like that. And some just rude retailers. One guy who wrote to me and just said, "Don't you fucking tell me how to run my business." I'm like, I'm not telling you how to run your business. I'm just trying to let you know about this comic book you might not know about, and like, don't yell at me. But yeah, so I mean, it's fascinating to see, and also the number of comic book stores that you think are out there, whatever number you have in your head, it's less.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're barely over 2,000 at this point now. So
the industry has changed a lot, it seems like, in the last couple of years. Does it seem like it changed to you from the inside in the last 2 years?
Yeah.
In terms of who's reading, who books are selling?
Yeah, definitely.
Or is it really just smoke and mirrors and everything's still the same as it was before?
Yeah, honestly, yes and no. I think that for every story you've read about women being an increased audience is true. I saw it at the cons. I saw it at that sort of thing. I mean, you're definitely seeing more and more women being engaged with comics. You're seeing, at least I saw younger people, you know, who don't have the preconceived notions or the you know, married to the traditions that we might have. But then at the same time, the same people are out there, the CGC chasers, the Marvel zombies, the DC whatever they are, the equivalent of, you know, like the people who just buy, you know, the superhero right. comics, like they're all, I mean, it's interesting that it is changing, it is evolving, but it's also very much the same, so it's kind of, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag there. So
Josh, you got a question?
So if you listen to this show before Ron went to work at Image, he was the Marvel guy. He was the diehard in that sense. We saw a lot of changes. They did in fact renumber Uncanny X-Men, and the world did not implode. I'm curious. I mean, you have worked really closely with a huge amount of the sort of main talent in the business. You know everybody at this point. I mean, we all know lots of people. That's not anything, but you work with them in a different capacity, I guess.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering how it has affected what kind of comics you like and how you like to enjoy them.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's still part of my heart that loves the X-Men and loves, you know, and I'm still reading All New X-Men and I read everything up until when it stopped, you know, like I was, you know, so I'm current on all that sort of stuff, but it's definitely not the be all end all that it once was. You know, I definitely have evolved as a reader and as somebody, you know, what I'm interested in, where I'm way more like, and that's one of the things I loved what Image is doing. I mean, I loved what I was working on, and the books that were being, that are being published, I think are some of, you know, challenging, creative, different stuff that is out there. And I'm glad to see it connecting with an audience and doing well. You know, I think it's, you know, it's most similar to the kind of, you know, like when people ask for recommendations of what books, I always lean on, okay, well, what kind of TV and movies do you like? And it's definitely comics have inched away from superheroes and more towards the genres that I enjoy, you know. So that's definitely been a major change for me personally.
Which creators are dicks?
I'm not gonna answer.
I know
that.
You're not gonna answer that.
At least on the air.
I mean, we know.
Yeah. Well, that said. Way more awesome people who I want to hug and not let go than dicks. I mean, the jerks to nice people ratio is so. I mean, they're, in all honesty, at least the people I got to work with. You know, like I very few people that I get have a bad taste in my mouth from. So
it's a lot of conversation about dicks and taste. Anyway, which of Robert Kirkman's planes is your favorite?
I gotta say the Gulfstream. I don't even know. I don't know if he has a plane.
Gunther flies that one, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. now he's got Starscream, right? Now that he's Mr. Transformers, so,
right?
Yeah.
So a lot of fans fall in the camps. I'm a Marvel fan. I'm a DC fan. I'm a militantly anti-Marvel DC. Yeah. Do you find that the companies were as competitive amongst each other, or is it all in the fan community?
Competition is there, but it's different. It's not drawing lines like I'm a Marvel fan. Whatever Here's the harsh truth if you guys want to believe it. It is, and I wrote about if you saw when I left Image, and I wrote a piece. I've left Image kind of statement type thing that was up on Medium, and I'm sure you can search it and find it. But the quote unquote friendly competition between companies. The intercompany competition is kind of shitty, to be honest with you. There's a lot, and I would imagine this is like in any industry. But
totally.
There's a lot of fake smiles and hugs, and I mean, like, everyone talks about how comics is great and it's a brotherhood or sisterhood or just whatever, everybody's in it together and we all help each other. Yeah, that's a lot of bullshit. There's also a lot of truth to it. Like, there's a lot of people who, like, there are people at other companies when I was at Image that if I needed something would absolutely help me and I would do the same and all that sort of stuff. But then there's a lot of shitty backhanded stuff going on behind the scenes that nobody knows about. You know, and Image was just as guilty of it as any other publisher. I'm not saying that Image was above it or anything like that, but there was the competition is pretty ruthless, and it's in a under the surface kind of way, which is almost, I mean, which almost leaves the worst taste in your mouth. That's almost the worst kind, you know. Mm-hmm. But again, I would imagine that's no different than any other industry. So I can't say it's completely shocking to hear. But,
sure.
But that's the truth. That's the harsh truth. Yeah.
Now, when you were there, Image grew its market share quite a bit. Yep. Do you think Image has hit the ceiling on what's possible in this market to grow into?
That's a tough one.
Because right now, what, DC and Marvel together are like, what, 70, 75% of the market?
No. They're
60.
Hang on. We'll find out exactly what they're at. It's closer to 60 than 75. Yeah. I know DC's been posting sub 30% market shares, which is rough, and Marvel's getting closer to 40. Yeah, so as of the May market shares, Marvel... here's the thing. You look at market share, and there are two market shares. There's dollars and units. And so, like, on dollars, Marvel's at 40%, DC's at 25%, Image was at 8%. Mm-hmm. And on units, Marvel was at 41%, DC was 26%, Image was at 10%. Those $2.99 books and the $9.99 trades and all the stuff like that, like, Image pricing stuff to lower to get to more people – definitely is the answer to that swing. I mean, like, for example, you look at like IDW, their dollar share in May was 5%, but their unit share was 3.8%. Because right. IDW is expensive. They have those hardcovers and all that sort of stuff. So there's a lot of weird playing with the numbers that goes on and all that sort of stuff. But as far as Image goes, the optimistic part of me says no, that the sky's the limit, that, you know, that with the amount of quality books that they're doing and all stuff like that, you know, they could make, and especially with what DC's doing, they can make a run for DC and all that sort of stuff. The reality of it, knowing the way Diamond is set up and the way the industry is set up and the way retailers react and stuff like that, it's a tough road. It's a tough road, and that's one of the reasons why I'm kind of happy to be gone, because it's a grind. Mm-hmm. You know, like I've explained to people working at Image has been like Sisyphus pushing the boulder up the hill, and you never know when the top of the hill is.
Right.
Like it just never stops. And that's the one major thing that got me about all the stuff is that there was never a moment to stop and breathe. Like we had at one point,
it's like the mail.
Yeah, it's like the mail, but
never
worse.
Stops coming out.
But worse. Not because it's not government backed. but yeah, no, at one point while I was at Image, we had hired somebody new and in the fall, and we got to the winter, and they were like, oh, so do we shut down for a couple of weeks, like around the holidays, whatever? And I just laughed. It's like, no, fuck no. I mean, like, you know, like it just it doesn't stop. It never stops. Like, you can't, there's not a moment. The moment that you got numbers in for a book and that book goes to the printer, immediately you got to look to next week and what are the next bunch of books coming and how do you work them and all that sort of stuff. So it just never stops.
So it leads me to the next question, which is, so, you know, every month the sales estimates come out, which are based on indexes and nebulous formulas. How accurate are those numbers to reality? So how much can fans rely on those as accurate reporting? Plus, how much now is digital factored into things?
Well, digital is not factored into those numbers at all.
Right, obviously, but so. I just mean the general sort of sales picture.
Yeah, those sales numbers that you see on the monthly basis are a little bit of bullshit. I mean, they're accurate in that they are numbers that were sold, you know, but they're inaccurate in that they're not the actual numbers that sold.
Are the ratios accurate? Like, is the ranking accurate? It's just that the numbers are wrong.
I don't know because I don't know the other I don't know other publishers' numbers. Right. I know this, so here's the thing is that when Diamond publishes those numbers, they are what they do is they're not counting international. Mm-hmm. So UK, Europe, all Australia, all that stuff is just not there, right? And then if a book is returnable, for example, you know, like, you know, a lot of times DC Image did this as well, whatever, said made the books, you know, the retailers could send back what they didn't sell. Diamond doesn't get those numbers. We don't know what's been returned until months and after. So they penalize the book in the charts by 10% or whatever it is to account for possible returns.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that number is not accurate. That number is not. It is invariably always less than what was sold. Whether or not it's in ratio to the other books, I don't know because I don't know the other publishers' numbers. But I know from the Image standpoint, it was frustrating because I'm looking at the. I know how many were printed, and in a lot of cases, it was way off than what was reported. You know, mm-hmm. So that was super frustrating sometimes. So.
And as the digital, digital is. You said earlier that the most important thing is the pre-orders. How at this point, at least in Image's point of view. Was digital sales considered in terms of a book's viability, also of trade sales?
That's major. I mean, that's digital is not as much as everyone thinks, for sure. It helps, and it's growing, and it's increasing, but it is less than 15% of all sales.
It's gravy. You
know. Yeah, it's gravy. It's gravy. Trade sales, on the other hand, at least for Image, and you can see this in the numbers or whatever, but trade sales are an enormous part. I mean, that's why I laugh when – I mean, Kieran Gillen wrote this reaction to somebody who wrote an article about how Wicked and the Vine was in trouble. And, you know, and Kieran was like, no, we're not in trouble. And I can I know for a fact as well, like trade sales are where Image creators really make the money is on trade sales. Mm-hmm. And book sales, because you're talking – that's when you get to go beyond the comic book stores and you're talking about Amazon. You're talking about bookstores and stuff like that. And that business, at least for Image, is booming and is huge.
I remember you telling me a story about a creator that on a book that I don't consider to be a huge hit, but that like they got the numbers for the trades in and that like paid off his house. Yeah. I remember you told me that and I was really surprised.
Yeah.
I can't say who that is, obviously, but and that was like not one of the giant books. It was one of the mid-tier, lesser books. So that was really enlightening. I think,
and that's the case in point. I mean, something like, you know, Chew, that's a book that, you know, it's going to end up at 60 issues, and it's going to have, you know, 13 or 14 volumes or whatever it is, and like, I mean, and they're going to be that book will keep paying dividends long after it's gone. You know, because of the book market. That's why it's tough, because a lot of times we talk to the creators, and a lot of the creators have been, you know, bred around single issue sales. And we would talk about it. I'm like, all right, just hang in there. Yes, the issues aren't selling what you want to be, but you're gonna make it in the trade. It's gonna work out. You know, like, and sometimes it doesn't, but sometimes it does. And you know, but it's definitely trade sales, at least for Image, is a huge, huge portion. It's a huge portion for DC. I mean, you can look at the book scan numbers and all sort of stuff. I mean, you get some insight in how the other publishers work. I mean, trade sales aren't as much of a priority for Marvel.
Marvel, yeah. So strange.
Because there's some inherent management decisions around paying for warehouse storage and things like that that they don't want to do. So they print a trade and let it go out of print, and then it sits there, you know, like, so I don't know. I can't speak to their business. I don't know what that strategy is around to it. But you know, Image's policy has been to, you know, get the books to print in book form and keep them in print and keep them available, because that's how you can sell them. So trade is a huge, huge part of the business, which you don't see. It's not reflected in those numbers either, because those numbers are single issues. You got to go look at the trade issues, and they only report in the top 10 trades. So yeah, it's all fucked up. That's what it boils down to.
Josh, you got one more? Should we wrap it up?
Yeah, I got one sort of related to my field of interest, I suppose. For a long time, the way that we found new people was to come up sort of through Image. But that's not really the way that it's working at this point.
Right.
Some people do, but a lot of people at Image are people who actually made their bones and established themselves at the bigger companies, a la the Kirkman Manifesto. And like, where do you see new people coming from at this point? Because I honestly can't tell. Every time I see a new name on a Marvel book now, I'm like, what the hell did this guy come from? I don't know. I'm out of it.
I mean, honestly, yeah, no. I mean, the breaking in Image, you know, kind of breaking in an Image is over. I would tell creators that. In fact, I had lunch with a creator a couple weeks ago, and I told him, I'm like, yeah, don't look to Image to be the one to break in. Sure, every now and then it might happen, and there might be somebody who comes on, but like the Hickman story or the, you know, Kieran and Jamie and stuff like that is very, very rare now. It's just, that's how it evolves. I mean, and that's one thing that I was kind of sad to see how it, you know, I would have liked that to still be the, you know, one of the main things, but what are you gonna do? Now, honestly, it's digital, Comixology submit, it's Kickstarter, as much as I hate to say it. You know, it's like people looking for any ways to get their stuff out there and then getting noticed. And then, you know, and then whether it's a boom, I mean, honestly, Boom has probably broken more people recently than any other publisher. You know, you look at the woman from Lumberjanes, and now she's doing stuff at Marvel and, you know, stuff like that. It's incredibly difficult for a creator to break in now. I think it's harder than ever. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And then breaking in is not the same thing as making a living doing it.
So yeah. That's, yeah. I mean, it's incredibly hard. You know, there's people like Black Mask Studios has given a lot of people breaks. You know, and Dark Horse is honestly giving, you know, taking some chances on some people, but you know, whether or not it's working or not is another question. But the breaking in the side of things is harder than ever, I would say, especially at the Image Marvel DC level. So I don't know if I answered the question, but yeah, but it's,
yeah, no, yeah. It's, I mean, you kind of confirmed what I thought about it. And I realized I've never talked to you about that.
Yeah.
So are we done grilling him?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't want to answer the Dick's question. What else is there?
Well, yeah. Well.
What book, you have to pick one book that you're the most proud of that you helped work on and usher in while you were there. What is it?
Oh, God damn it.
I know it's between two things, I think.
What do you think it's between?
I think it's between Wicked and the Vine and Southern Bastards.
No, because Wicked and the Vine didn't need me. I mean, not that it didn't need me, but like I'm immensely proud of Wicked and the Vine. I think it's awesome. But like Wicked and the Vine was planned for before I was at Image. I mean, that was the plan that they had wanted to do that. Kieran had the idea, and they had already been published at Image and stuff like that. Honestly, I know
what it is, because Ron's always saying to me, Josh, offline, that this book is its success is all about me.
Stop!
Is The Walking Dead?
Yeah, of course, right? Clearly,
Ron takes full credit for The Walking Dead,
which is odd.
It's continued success, everything. He's like, Kirkman doesn't even write anymore. I basically write the scripts.
Stop!
I mean, this is what Ron's always saying to me.
I did not say any of that. I did not say any of that. No, honestly, I mean, like,
Adlard is an anagram for Ron Richards pencils. I think.
No, honestly, I can't pick one, but I'm super. On the top of the list, I'm really, really proud of what Remender's doing.
Can you get Matteo Scalera to stop it?
Yeah, I know. I told him to don't stop. No, but it was you know, it's you know, Black Science, Deadly Class, Low. Like, Rick is putting everything he's got into those books. They're amazing, and it's been, I'm just lucky to be a part of that. Southern Bastards was an, was another big one, getting the Jasons to come over to Image and do the, I mean, I there were many, many long drunken discussions in the in con bars with Latour talking about that book and the approach to it and stuff like that. And just to see it now get going to TV and stuff like that is just awesome. And then finally, like, Witches was one that was, you know, working with Scott and Jock, and Jock, who, by the way, Jock is the greatest person in con. Jock is just like one of my favorite people. He's fantastic. Anyway. You know, those are the books. Rick's books, Southern Bastards and Witches, are ones that I'm immensely, immensely proud of, as well as Invisible Republic. I mean, there's, I mean, I was really, really lucky to have a, to work with these amazing creators, bringing their vision to, you know, to reality, which is super, super special. So, yeah.
Well,
all right. You're not working there anymore. So,
well, no, it makes me happy. So,
yeah.
All right. Well,
yeah, but it,
job,
it was, it was awesome. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. I definitely got what I wanted out of it. And now I'm excited to do other fun stuff. So, yeah.
All right. Well, we were proud of your time there. And now that you're here, we can, I don't know.
I'm just glad that you guys took me back. That's why I was a little.
Who
worried.
Are we going to get gossip from now?
Oh, that's,
because
that keeps
this
going.
Is a problem.
That keeps going.
So normally we would have had the audience questions, but so if you want to get back to the show, email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave us a voicemail at 888-FANBOY-326-2697. And if you do that, tell us who you are and where you're from. And now everyone can stop asking questions about what Ron's been up to, or yes, will he talk about Image? He's done so.
There you go. That's it.
So we don't need to hear him talk about himself anymore.
No.
Why don't you guys plug what you've been doing lately on other
shows? Yeah, well, I haven't stopped podcasting, for people who don't realize, and I've, for the past 2.5 years, I've still actively been podcasting, co-hosting another show called All About Android over on the Twit Network. It's all about Android. It's about Android phones and software and hardware and news and all stuff like that. And it's a blast and it's a ton of fun. They've got a great community over there that rivals the iFanboy community in terms of awesomeness. So go to twit.tv/AAA and you can check out that show. It's a lot of fun. I do it weekly every Tuesday. You can watch it live or you can download it or listen to it or whatever. But then in addition to that, this week I was on the Star Wars Minute. I snuck in at the end. After Josh and Connor both got their time on Star Wars Minute, I talked about the last minute of dialogue on The Return of the Jedi.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
What's the very last word?
The last word is brother. It's Leia saying, "He's my brother." That's the last line of dialogue in Return of the Jedi.
So. And then he makes a kiss adjustment.
He grabs her neck very violently. So yeah, go listen to Star Wars Minute. It's awesome.
Yeah, I was on a whole week of Star Wars Minute a couple of weeks ago, and Connor just did his own episode, so we're all over that. Highly recommended show. Those guys are very funny. They also do another podcast called Alphabetical, and this week I did 3 episodes of that. Alphabetical is we go through Beatles songs alphabetically.
Alphabetically.
Alphabetically. And I was in the eyes, so I had If You've Got Trouble, In My Life, and In Spite of All the Danger, that came out this past
year. And your favorite
week.
Of those three?
Oh, I think In Spite of All, no. I think I'm going to go with In My Life on that one, because those other two songs are not good. No, it's literally like If You Got Trouble is my least favorite Beatles song of all time. I hate it.
I don't think I've ever even heard it.
It's at the end. It came out when the anthologies came out. They had recorded it during Help, I think, but it might have been one of the other albums from that time, and they just hated it, so they just buried it. And then, like, later, you know, a couple of people tried to put it on a greatest hits album or a lot, and they were like, nope, no, they just wouldn't do it. And so it wasn't until they needed stuff to put on the anthology that it came out. It's just a really mediocre, boring song. It's a Lennon McCartney song. It's just bad.
You know what my favorite one is? It's Two of Us.
It's a good song.
Two of us going nowhere. I did somewhere.
Why don't you Ron, tell them where to go.
All right, on your way home.
You and I your memory. Longer than the road that stitches.
Head over to ifanboy.com where you can comment on this show, talk about this week's books, and find all the other podcasts, and you can comment on those and that sort of thing. It's all there at ifanboy.com. You can follow us on Twitter at ifanboy or on Facebook at facebook.com/ifanboy. And if you're so inclined, you can follow us individually. You can follow Josh at J.A. Flanagan, Connor at C.S. Kilpatrick, and I am at Ron XO.
You broke the naming convention.
I did.
Just to go, initials, last name.
Oh. Sorry.
See?
It's changed.
Draw an
X over there. I have less characters. It's easy. You can get more content in when you tweet at me. So
hey, if you dig the show, write a review on iTunes.
Hey.
Better yet, tell your friends about this show. Perhaps don't tell your retailer friends about this particular episode. And introduce your mom to the podcast. We're pro mom. It's our platform.
Hey, I said there were some good retailers out there. There were great retailers out there.
Some of my best friends are retailers.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't write your retailer off yet.
So, iFanboy's platform has always been pro mom. So please introduce your mom to the podcast.
You know what? Just in case, my local retailers, my friends who run Double Midnight Comics.
That's a great store. They are great.
Concord and Manchester are amazing.
They're awesome. I got the opportunity to work with them while I was at Image, and they are cool people. So,
mm-hmm. And they know what they're doing.
You were lucky, yes. They're expanding, right? Didn't they open multiple stores? And
yeah, there's two stores. They're doing conventions. They got one coming up this week in Worcester.
That's great.
And then there's the Granite Con.
Everybody at Con just so angry.
You get out of the way. When you get out of the way, Red Sox. All right,
Red Sox.
That's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. You come back next week?
Yeah, I'll come if you guys want me. I don't know. Do you want me to?
Till next week. I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I am Josh.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired. But it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good. You feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.